Hello, world. Welcome to WFHR's Rapid Support, proudly brought to you by Crockett Septic for the September 5th, 2025. Have your host, James J. Mailoff, behind the mic, and I am joined by our good friend around here, Representative Scott Krug, joins us once a month. It's always good to hang out with you, Scott, especially it's been a while. How you doing?
It is. I think we kind of took the summer off. We got so busy and just traveled. I got over to Taiwan for about a week, and then we were off to Boston after that. So I've been all over the globe here in this last couple months. So it's nice to be home.
Well, I got to pull an audible here. We got plenty to talk about.
But I forgot about that. I never even told you about Taiwan.
Yeah. What brought you to Taiwan?
So the government of Taiwan actually every year or so comes to the capital and asks us to, you know, if we would support a resolution strengthening the bond between Taiwan and Wisconsin, since we work together on so many things on exports and imports. So we worked with them for quite a few years on making sure we have that bond, and they turned around and invited myself and other legislators to come visit them in person in Taiwan and have meetings with their government and with their manufacturers, and got to see all of the things that Taiwan's into on AI and semiconductors, and, you know, develop ways that Wisconsin can work with them. So it was quite a whirlwind week. So besides the 95 degree temperatures with 95% humidity, it was a trip of a lifetime, I believe.
I was going to say, I mean, you know, how often are you going to be brought to Taiwan? That's really cool to hear that it was a good experience. Awesome. Also really great to hear about that strengthening of that relationship. That's a win-win for both places.
It was, and it was, you know, a double-edged sword on the way back home, as we got a nice threatening letter from the People's Republic of China saying, hey, you shouldn't have done that.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Okay, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, you know, glad you're watching where I'm at, but yeah.
Yeah, you definitely want to keep an eye on
it. Yeah, we got to visit the entire country from the south to the north, got on the high-speed rail that connects us between Tainan City in the south to Taipei, where we spent most of the week, and it was kind of, you know, there were some meetings that were less interesting than others. You know, it was a little bittersweet to walk into Foxconn's world headquarters in Taipei and talk to them about the Wisconsin experience. So they may not invite me back to Foxconn headquarters, but we still got a chance to talk to just about anybody that had any connection to Wisconsin, or even more importantly, to companies that wanted to have a connection with Wisconsin. So we've been back here the last 6 weeks here just developing ideas and what we can do and the legislature to try to do more outreach and be more accepting of all the offers that Taiwan wants to, you know, have inroads into Wisconsin with. And, you know, kind of a double bonus as it gets to tick off the Chinese a little bit. So I guess it helps.
It's a win-win right there. That being said, you know, any chance to strengthen any relationships we have with some of our key contributors to both of our country and our what we do to them with export, import, all of these, you know, every 5 seconds you're hearing the word tariff in some of that conversation, anything to strengthen those relationships, that's a great thing for all of us. That's really good to hear.
Yeah, it is interesting because, you know, global politics do come up when you're representing a state. You don't necessarily deal with federal issues too much, but, you know, tariffs did come up a lot. And honestly, it was one of those things that actually, I know people have different opinions of it sometimes, but, you know, tariffs were one of the driving reasons a lot of the companies in Taiwan were looking to get a footprint in Wisconsin. So it double-edged sword, you know, it's hard to hear and go through the consternation of what, you know, national politics has on our daily lives and listening to the noise sometimes, but
yeah.
It was really a driver, I think, for Taiwan and other countries to start looking to the U.S. to bring manufacturing back. Because if you look at Wisconsin historically, we are one of the champions of manufacturing in the United States over our history, right? We have more manufacturing jobs per capita in Wisconsin than most other states across the entire country. So, you know, if we're not building things and making things here in Wisconsin, you know, we're shrinking and contracting. So we're looking for partners all over the country and all over the world. And if that national conversation draws that, I guess that's the one benefit of it, I think.
Well, and you know, one of the things I think certainly that we've been able to do with this show, and part of the reason we appreciate the time from you every month from you and Senator Teston, is being able to talk about the difference of what's happening on a federal level and if it does or not affect you on a state level, specifically here in Wisconsin. And we find more and more when talking with you guys that, okay, well, this thing that's going on, it really doesn't affect us, or maybe this does, or how it does. And being able to really get into that stuff, more times than not, I think both of us have found in our particular fields, when people have concerns or fears even, it tends to be because they don't have the information. They just don't know, you know, certain things. And I don't begrudge them for that. I just am thankful that we're able to get the info out there. And speaking of all of this kind of conversation and kind of segue into the state budget passing, we haven't been able to talk since then.
I was just going
to
say it's a perfect segue for the state budget.
Just like we planned it. What are your thoughts on that budget passing? Now, I will tell everybody that if you get Scott's newsletter, you kind of already know a little bit of his feelings on this one. I encourage you to sign up for it if you haven't already. But for those that did not, Scott, tell us your takes on this, your first impressions of the state budget passing.
Yeah, you know, I knew at some point these last couple of sessions that there's going to be, you know, what I've been calling this grand bargain session, right, where both sides are finally going to say, okay, I've had enough arguing. Like me, I'm gonna be 50 in a couple of weeks, right? And I'm to the point where I'm done arguing about stupid crap with people. Right?
God, do I hear you? Yes.
So, I know, right? So it's what the state budget really came down to is like both sides is finally saying, hey, you know what? Why don't we just get these things done that have to get done for the state? You can argue about all the other, you know, inconsequential stuff later, but this one's pretty important. So for the first time in my legislative career, we had a bipartisan state budget passed the legislature and signed by the governor within 2 hours of the legislature passing it. I mean, and it goes into the work. And when I say work, I mean, it goes into every single conversation of every little aspect of the budget and getting agreement on that ahead of time. Instead of just throwing it at the wall and seeing what sticks, we finally have these deeper conversations and say, okay, we want to do this. We know you want to do this. Are you okay if we did it this way or if we did it that way? And again, another example here is the federal, the one big bill that, that Trump and Congress had passed did have a really big impact on that budget being passed and signed as quick as it did, because the federal government was looking at a way to take away our ability to find some more money in our Medicaid program. And if Congress had signed, or if Congress had passed and the president signed the one big beautiful bill before the state budget got done, we would have lost out on an opportunity to recapture about $1 billion in funding for our Medicaid program. So I think that race that we had between the state government and the federal government kind of brought us together in the state government and said, hey, this is where policy needs to happen most. Feds, I get you have your ideas, but as a state, we want to make sure we're protecting our people first. So I think that's what really drove the conclusion of the state budget that first week of July. Saying, hey, we really got to get all these things done. So, and it was great to have that. It's nice to be back home after the budget passed. And I think people take away from that fact, whether they liked an individual thing in the budget or not. I think the thing that sticks with people the most about the budget is bipartisan. And there were fewer vetoes. And there were some big local wins. I mean, we got a huge local win to keep Domtar and Nacusa operating. So it's just, it was a great budget for the first time in 15 years. I can actually say it was a great, great budget. So,
you know, Scott, one thing that I think that I was noteworthy to me during this whole process, as we're going back and forth about it, and you and I were talking about the budget and the possibility of it passing and all that. And I like you, a lot of people, we knew it was just a matter of time. But one thing that I really implore listeners, and I imagine that you and your colleagues, Republican, Democrat, all alike, none of you go into this expecting a perfect budget. I don't know we do ourselves as citizens or you yourselves. We go in with the best of intentions. We go in with certain things we want. But everybody has negotiated in life and knows how this works. It's a good negotiation if both parties leave and you're a little happy and a little, frustrated. That's kind of how this works.
Yeah, it is. It's exactly how it works. And being in real estate for the last 10 years, the state budget was almost exactly like a real estate transaction. You know, you've got one side that wants something, the other side that wants something, and you figure out the middle, you know, whatever that in between might be, where the most important people who walk away from it happy are the ones that are actually deeply involved in it. And for us, that's the taxpayers, right? So if they feel like they've gotten what they want out of it, why should our personal feelings as representatives and senators, or the governor for that matter, really weigh into it at all, right? Why should I feel hurt if my priority did not get done? If the bigger scheme and the bigger picture is that we've kept our tax rates down, we invested in our priorities, and we spent more money on roads, we spent more money on school. And so my individual feelings as a state rep that I think we spent too much really shouldn't matter if those are the priorities that we heard from people. And in our budget survey, these are the exact things we heard from people, is, hey, You need to make sure we're taking care of our roads. Hey, you need to make sure you're really getting our schools funded at an appropriate level. You need to take notice of these things from us, and that's why we do those surveys and do the outreach, is so we know what people want. And then that's what we deliver. And in the end, if it's not, perfect to me, that's great. I've been married twice and I have six kids. There is no perfect in my life, James. I'm telling you.
Oh, I can relate to that so much. You mentioned the survey results. When you got those and now we have the budget, are you seeing some correlation there with the spring survey results?
It's perfect, right? I mean, it lines up exactly how we wanted it to line up. Mm-hmm. And that's why we did listening sessions before we did the survey. And that's why we took the survey and the listening sessions, on the road and talked to everybody and brought all that back to our joint finance team here and just took those priorities, threw in some of the things that I don't know if people necessarily realize were an issue that we could put in on top of their needs, and then, put it all together to a package to our finance team and say, hey, these are the things that we want. Right. And I think, from everything, like I said, the $42 million to Domtar to make sure that the dam in Rothschild is repaired, but also brings back $100 million from Domtar and investment in the Coosa mill and the Rothschild mill. I think those things add on top of our constituent needs for roads and schools and safety and the typical things that, everybody really wants in their daily lives. I think that's what made this budget the biggest win, is that we had to go into the state Senate. We had to find Democrat votes in the state Senate. Those things, brought out even further priorities that maybe were lower on our list in a more Republican area, but still made the list for people who don't necessarily vote Republican, but responded to us. So even the priorities of both sides in my district were well represented in this budget discussion.
Mm-hmm. And there, as always, when as soon as the budget passes, there's work to be done. There are gray areas that might have been missed or things that could use more funds or more attention. And I'm sure that you and your colleagues are working diligently on those and certainly listening to constituents about those concerns. And again, there is no perfect bill. There is no perfect budget or anything. I think that coming out of it, I think whatever, however you vote, you're feeling very similar to what Scott's pointing to and everything, that there are positives, there are negatives, and that's kind of how this world works. we keep moving. And to that point, Scott, you have so many bills that you're a part of, whether you're championing and trying to get passed or have gotten passed. It's another reason why I remind everybody to go to Scott's, get his e-letter. It really, you guys do a great job breaking these down and not bogging things down, I would say, where it's just endless talking. You really cover these bills really well. There's one in particular that I wanted to bring some more attention that I don't know it could ever get all the attention it deserves, and that's Assembly Bill 201, also known as Braden's Law. This establishes strict criminal penalties for sexual extortion. This is a topic that is very sensitive to me. This is one that I care about very much, and it's part of the reason, I'll be honest, I wanted to talk about it, but I know for you, this was just as important.
And this is one of those that kind of crosses over party lines, right? We do some of these bills from time to time, and, it's something that happened in real life in central Wisconsin that really affected a family to the core, right? When you've got these circumstances where individuals can basically sit behind a keyboard and say and do and act however they want with minor-ish consequences, it's not fair to anybody involved. And I think, in Assembly Bill 201 that Representative Jacobson from the Mosinee area really spearheaded with Pat Snyder in Wausau, I was glad to jump onto their cause because this affected a family actual life. Like, there are children in our communities who are so affected by what others say to them or do to them that it ended up causing a death in central Wisconsin, right? I mean, and those bills really hit home, and it's really hard when you have those families come testify on a bill and then you have somebody who's not politically necessarily attached to it or doesn't feel the same pain from their district have to educate them on what it means and why we're doing it. So I'm thankful that we finally came to, some agreement within our own caucus to say that we've got to get this bill done. We have amended it to make sure it's gotten enough support in the state assembly, and now it's over to the state Senate to finish the job. But it's imperative that we get those things done for public safety, which is literally the number one reason that government exists, is providing for the safety and welfare on the residents of our community. So this is one of those issues that, that cuts down to the core of why government even exists.
I agree with every word. Just piggybacking on what you're saying, I would like to credit the everybody involved with this bill of the insight. You know, the older we get, the harder it gets to remember what it's like to be in school. And then you find out about what it's like for kids nowadays in school. And it's we can't relate to it at all. There's no way that we can possibly even come close to relating to it for generations like ours and everything. The idea that you get that, the idea that you and that those that in behind this bill understand that there's a lot more going on nowadays with kids than we realize. And trying to cover these bases, trying to help these kids out, help these families out. I think it's to your point, it's the purpose of government. And I don't mean to give you credit for doing your job necessarily, but I do. Right. I do, because this is one of those things that... Look, we know how this goes. Oftentimes, we saw this with a lot of sex crimes, with a lot of drug issues early on in the 80s. We're late on these things. We're way, way late on these things. I don't know that you could ever be early enough with a topic like this, but at the very least, we're getting on this earlier than most times we do with subjects like this. I'm proud of our state. I'm proud of that.
You know, I appreciate that. I think, you know, it's funny for me because when my older kids, I call them, my five adult children, you know, when they were in school, the biggest issues they faced were literally person-to-person bullying, right? I mean, and now I have an 11-year-old who's a sixth grader who is more open to cyberbullying, to sextortion messages, to things that you would never had thought that kids in our communities were ever going to have to face before. It is scary as a parent. So, I mean, that is the biggest benefit I've seen to having a child later in life. Mm-hmm. Getting to see like a second generation problem come up where my older kids didn't have to deal with this, where Jack has to on a daily basis, where you know, I have to worry about what's coming across his screen at any point in any given day, but I still have to be open enough as a parent to let him go experience life.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, just the confusion that parents have to have nowadays just to muddle their way through, it's scary. But it's manageable if you've got the right people in place to do the right things as partners. And I think, not just government, you know, government's never the solution, but all of our community partners who have come to us with these concepts and ideas saying, hey, maybe we should talk about doing this on a statewide level, or maybe we should, you know, take some time and have a conversation about this, or a task force, or it doesn't come from us necessarily. I mean, it's all of the partners who came to us to start, who saw it on the ground before we ever did, who bring us these ideas, and you know, whether it's the sextortion bill we're talking about now, or the EpiPen bill that we're working on, that based on lives that were affected back home, those are things we got to take our time and actually do, instead of just saying, okay, we're looking for the next headline.
Right.
You know, these may not be headline stories, but these are definitely things that affect people way the hell more than fixing a pothole on, you know, Highway 54.
Right. You know, and as we go along here, next month when we get together, another one of those kind of topics I want to get into, you know, voters and their confidence in their vote, voter integrity, some of those topics. I know that you've been a part of some panels and some listening sessions over the last couple of months. We have some stuff in the news as well with that. So I think next time we get together, we'll get into that one when we have a little more time. I did want to remind everybody.
We got a ton of bills coming on those, and we'll definitely dive deep into that next session.
Looking forward to it. Appreciate that. I also appreciate that you have these listening sessions going on. I wanted to remind everybody about that you have one coming up this coming Monday, September 8th.
Yeah, we got three.
Right? Yeah, three of them. That's right.
The entire day doing listening sessions. So we're going to be September 8th, 10 o'clock in the morning, going to start down in Adams at the Community Center. It's usually one of the most better attended ones, actually, when we get down to Adams and hang out at the Community Center there behind County Market. So 10 o'clock there, and then from there, heading back up to Nakusa to hit the Charles and Joanne Lester Library at noon. And we don't get a lot of folks in Nakusa, so we got to drive some of that attendance. We can keep doing this one in Nakusa. And then after that, we'll be heading up to Rapid to the McMillan Memorial Library, 2 o'clock. So 10 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 2 o'clock. And then even on the 15th, if you can't make it on the 8th, we've got a couple more coming up on the other side of the lake, I call it. So me and Camp Douglas in the seat on the 15th. So, I mean, they're all in our e-update. I would really encourage people just to get on the e-update list, whether you agree with us politically or not. If you just send an email to us at rep.krug, K-R-U-G, at legis.wisconsin.gov, and just say, hey, please subscribe me to the e-update. It is all in there every week. You can do a 2-minute video just to recap, you know, recapture everything, so you have to read it all sometimes. And I think it's probably the best way we've had to get information out to people before the convention.
Encourage you to be a part of those, everybody. As always, treat each other right, act like adults. But certainly, if you have feelings and thoughts and questions, that's why Scott does this. He wants to hear from you. Just do it with some respect, treat each other right, and look forward to seeing how those go and talking with you about them next month. Scott, we did our homework, we did our job. Now we could talk a little sports. I, of course, want to talk Brewers with you, as they're the best team in baseball. But then the Packers in Dallas made this gigantic trade that we can't, as sports fans, we have to address the Micah Parsons trade a little bit.
So it was kind of nice watching the game a little bit last night with Philadelphia and Dallas, and knowing that whoever lost the game was going to be complained about not having their top pass rusher in, right? Jalen Carter got kicked out for spitting at Dak Prescott, and then all of a sudden Micah Parsons is gone for Dallas, and guess who lost, right?
Yep.
Win for Dallas. So now Green Bay's got to step up and get the win on Sunday against Detroit, so hopefully Micah gets to play. And then the Brewers, I mean, I've almost avoided talking about them this entire year because every time I do, I get disappointed in September. But I think we're going to be safe now with the 6-game lead over the Cubs with a couple weeks to go. So, I mean, just incredible team. Just a bunch of workmen, journeymen, utility guys are just pulling together and getting it done under a scrappy Lou Brown type manager, you know? I mean, yeah. Cinderella story in the making, I tell you.
I think that, you know, when it comes to what the Brewers have going for them, speed, defense, certain things like that, that's not a rhythm. That's not something that goes away. You know, that's not a trend. That's not, there are things you can win a World Series on that. We've seen teams do it. And I don't believe that there's any team to be scared of in baseball right now, except for maybe the Brewers. So, yeah.
Well, and that's the thing. You saw, I mean, if you look at all the, what they've done against every division leader this year, I mean, they just took 2 out of 3 for Philly. They swept the season series with the Dodgers. They've handled the Cubs really well. I mean, so no wild card or division leader in the National League has really challenged them. I mean, as long as their pitching holds together, it could be a really, really, really good year for them.
Yeah. We'll be following it. We'll be talking about it again next month. Looking forward to it. Scott, if people want to reach out to you, how can they do that?
Cell phone is almost always on. 715-323-3293. If you don't get me there, obviously people send me messages on Facebook all the time with Messenger. Feel free to do that. I mean, we really try to get back to everybody as quick as we can, but if I don't get back to you right away, it's always by the next Thursday, which is the day that my staff drive me to do every phone call that's come in and answer everybody by that day. So if you don't hear from me right away, you'll hear from me by the following Thursday. So
appreciate that and appreciate the time, Scott. Safe travels out there. We'll talk again soon.
Yeah, you bet, man. Take care.
And thank you all for joining us for another edition of Crockett Septics, WFHR's Rapids Report. Appreciate you being here, everyone.